You want two people who embody integrity, honesty, loyalty. You don't know anyone like that.
Ah, shit.
You want two people who embody integrity, honesty, loyalty. You don't know anyone like that.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode, Season 10, Episode 7, Laying Pipe. And now here are your hosts, Tara Arrieto and Sarah E. Butting.
Oh, no!
Gah.
And yet there's not really any pipe laying in this episode? Like, of all the things, I don't know.
Yeah.
Let's get into it, starting with our B-plot. St. Donna cares about a dead homeless man. So Donna's coming into work when she opens the gate at the courtyard outside the store and nudges the foot of a guy who has been sleeping there. She very nicely asks if he's okay, but he's confused. And after saying the names Kenny and Lewis and that he's sorry, he takes off. Actually, until we hear them again later in the episode, I had written down Penny and Luz, like L-U-Z. But fine. That's not what it is.
Yeah, I also heard Penny, and I was a little surprised that we didn't get another Phyllis here, but
yeah. Oh, so Noah, who two episodes ago was working every night, rolls by the store to try and take Donna out, but she's all nervous and breathless, saying she can't tonight because she has stuff to do at home. Clip two.
Okay, what kind of stuff?
I don't know, just stuff.
Classic stuff.
Yeah.
She finally admits that she's giving him the cold shoulder because she no longer wants to shack up with a guy who got her arrested as a sex worker, which, you know, fair. Although, to be fair to him, where we saw them leave it was that they had, like, kind of made up. So this is dumb. She firmly says she doesn't know if she wants to move in anymore at all. And when he follows her out of the courtyard, she's watching as first responders tend to the homeless man who has died. She says she knows him, overstatement, and that he's dead because he needed help and she turned away from him, not what happened. The next day, Kelly and Noah are both trying to console Donna in their typical individual manners in clip three.
There was nothing you could have done. I could have given him food or water or something.
There's no way you could have kept that from happening.
Okay, Luke Perry, director of this episode, can you please explain to Vincent Young that a man is dead, Donna's sad, and that barking at her is not a normal human response? Like, I'm irritated by her, but I'm not dating her.
Well, and I wouldn't even characterize that as barking. It was just his usual, like, goofy, like, all right, lack of affect that sometimes works to hilarious effect, but in this case was like, just ask for another take and tell him to say it slower, something,
right.
Anything. Yeah. And while you're up, tell Jenny Garth to be less of a bitch about it.
Well, she then downshifts idiotically to saying it was just chance that put the dead man in their courtyard and not someone else's, which, yes, but not helpful.
And also, Donna then, maybe talk to Fugly Mall security about, 'cause he, like, right. He had a box and everything. He was sleeping there. So,
yeah,
given that Kelly shot someone in a store, maybe...
Yeah.
The mall cops need to step it up a little.
Well, maybe that's lowering everyone's rent because of, you know, the guy that got killed there. So they can't afford to have a security guard anymore. Who knows?
Oh, could be.
So then Donna even more idiotically responds basically by saying she thinks it was a sign that he was there in her path and is being very annoying, but to give her some credit, she does at least look like she's on zero sleep, which you can see in the visual aids. Like, she looks legitimately wrecked about this, which, a normal person would be.
Mm.
But she's determined to find out who this guy was and why she was the last person that he ever saw, and Noah wants to help her. So the coroner tells Donna and Noah, as he has no reason to do, all about the corpse. He had no ID. His fingerprints weren't in the system, presumably because he'd never been arrested, which Noah finds impossible to believe, I guess, because everyone he knows, including himself, has been arrested at least once. The corpse, however, probably just slipped through society's cracks, the coroner says, and now they'll treat him as a John Doe, which means cremate him and store his ashes for a while in case a loved one comes to collect him. Donna pointlessly
we
wonders.
We really get into a lot of detail about what becomes of, you know,
the indigent.
Yes. The dying intestate in Los Angeles. Like, I wasn't not interested.
Right.
Compared to what's usually going on the show. It was just an interesting choice for a sweeps episode, but okay.
Right. So Donna pointlessly wonders how someone can be so anonymous, but the coroner says he wasn't. The county just doesn't have the resources to conduct an investigation. And then hands over the dead guy's personal effects just because she asked. I don't know. I gather it's bad 1999 photoshopping, by the way. But the actor that we saw had a beard, and the face in the snapshot that was on his person looks like a burn victim. You can see it in the visual aids. It's like they tried to like content aware fill with like skin from his forehead. It's so weird.
It's very creepy.
Yeah. Anyway, it's the only photo Donna has to show random passersby outside the bar for which the dead guy also had a matchbook. And thank God she didn't decide to draw him freehand as we have seen her attempt so many times before. Do you know this
dog
guy?
Ears.
Exactly. Ma'am, that is a dog.
Oh, it's Rocky 3. No.
Fortunately, the first guy that we see her ask knows that his name was Willard Reiner. Noah aggressively says they're looking for information about him and then slightly more gently says he just died. And it turns out Willard may not be widely mourned in clip 4.
Anyway, like we said, we're trying to find people who knew him, hopefully arrange a memorial service for him.
So you two didn't know him?
No, not really. Actually, we bumped into each other yesterday, but he had a real sweetness in his eye. I thought his friends might want to know what happened.
Yeah, well, you know, they might if he had any friends.
What are you talking about?
This guy was a thief. He stole, he swindled, he borrowed from everybody inside that bar. On top of that, he left his family. I don't know anybody about any kind of sweetness at all, but I guarantee you when I go back in there and announce that Willard's dead, I won't have to pay for a drink the rest of the night.
Okay, the end of that little whew, that was Noah. And what exactly is that emotion, is that noise supposed to tell us Noah is feeling? Because it's not clear to me.
I don't know.
Neither does Luke Perry. So yet another classic grim conversation with an extremely appropriate soundtrack then follows in clip 5.
So what, you're just going to give up?
I never should have started.
I know you don't believe that.
Yeah, I do. Just because a guy dies 50 feet away from my store does not mean I have to make him my life's work.
Oh, the boogie woogie score for this "What is my responsibility to a dead stranger" conversation.
A dead stranger who passed through my life like Bill Haley and one of his comments. Is that?
Oh, yes. Oh, my God.
Bye.
So Noah makes the reasonable point that they only heard one bad review of Willard, but Donna thinks she built him up too much, which Noah counters by saying she built him up and then tore him down just as easily. And she philosophically says she's disillusioned and that Noah is not making her feel better. But it turns out he hasn't really been talking about old dead Willard at all. Clip 6.
Listen to me, okay? You take these people and you build them up to these heights. You give them these glorious attributes and hold them to standards they just can't maintain. They can't. Then you get disappointed and you walk away.
I don't think I expect too much.
Sometimes I think you expect the world. I really do.
This is not about you, buddy.
Also, attributes. Settle, please.
Also, like, the idea that Donna is the one who's building him up and then, like, Noah can't live up to her expectations. Like, she expects you to not drunk drive, rape people, or run a strip club illegally out of your business. Like, that's not building you up. That's, like, the pretty basic expectations for what one hopes for from a romantic partner.
Yeah. Also, her jewelry standards are ankle height low. You're getting away with it, buddy. Chill out.
Honestly. So the next day, it's fucking Judith Hogue, Raina's sister Tandy from Nashville, coming into the club with Donna and getting introduced to Noah as Willard's daughter. And if not for the obituary that Donna and Noah ran, his family wouldn't have found Willard. His daughter says he used to be a good man and a hard worker. One afternoon, the school bus he drove was broadsided by a drunk driver. Noah? No, it wasn't him. But if there's any kind of remorse about this, we don't see it, of course. And two kids were killed, though their names were Kenny and Lewis, of course. And it wasn't his fault, but he blamed himself and started drinking, eventually leaving the family. And Wendy, the daughter, is on her way out when Donna gives her his photo and simpers a lot about it. Donna does, not Wendy. Wendy is played by a good actor. Donna ran the obituary because she didn't give up on Willard and realized Noah was right about her punishing people who let her down, as she says in clip 7.
What I'm trying to say is it's my own fault. It's not yours.
Now, I've given you plenty of reasons to be mad.
And more reasons to be happy.
I agree.
No. No, you haven't. You really haven't.
And unless he has three dicks, I'm not sure where that math is going.
Wow. Three? Gosh.
I don't know. Why not?
No, you're right. Like, you're right. He's definitely, you know, even if it was just two dicks, that math would not check out. Three, maybe.
And here we are back at the leg pipe theme, which is where we belong.
On to the A plot. Steve's imminent marriage has everyone going through changes, and Gina can't resist a blackmail scheme. They are related, I promise. Kelly and Dylan meet Steve and Janet at the Peach Pit to learn they are up for the job of godparents. This is actually more than a ceremonial title for Janet, because her godmother, Lynn, was a safe adult for her to talk to about stuff that she couldn't bring to her own parents. Dylan and Kelly know enough to be flattered, but are also noncommittal. Steve and Janet thought the four of them could go to Ojai to talk to Janet's pastor and get the whole story on what godparenting entails. Dylan and Kelly are into it. The best part is they'll all get to try out the new Cessna Sanders minivan. Dylan can't believe Steve is graduating from his dumb Corvette, and Steve says he's excited. Elsewhere in the Peach Pit, the cheery doo-wop music is once again a poor score for an uncomfortable conversation as Walter Hawkins bitches out Matt for not doing enough on Pete's case, since Pete is scheduled to be executed in 6 hours. No, the ruling was like last week at the most. That's not how fast execution works, even if it was your last appeal, I'm pretty sure.
Pretty sure that's true. Also pretty sure they don't do it that time of day. They don't do it at like 2 p.m.
Maybe he said 16 hours. Sorry. Mm. Either way, whatever.
Yeah.
Matt claims there's still a lot he can do in that time, but Walter doesn't seem very confident, and Walter is probably right.
Mm.
So then Matt has an even more conversation at the cash register with Kelly that starts thusly, clip 8.
Hi. Didn't know you're going to be down here this morning.
It's the Peach Pit, you bonehead. Of course she's going to be down this morning, as you are, because you're all in a Twilight Zone episode where you have to keep going to the same shitty restaurant with inappropriate doo-wop music over and over again. You're not really in the good place. Figure it out.
Yeah, he's trying to flirt through her principled stance against him, basically. She asks what he thinks about Janet and Steve's godparent offer and then snits at him for being insufficiently effusive. Like, bitch, you were on a break. You called. But Matt has a good answer for once. Clip 9.
Well, why don't you ask me in 36 hours when Pete Hawkins is dead?
Oh, execution burn.
All right, so it was 36 hours. Sorry. Sorry, my notes were wrong, guys. Kelly seems to think this is out of bounds and objects to his characterization of her godparent questions as small talk, but Matt's got a zinger for that one too. Clipton.
You want my opinion? I think being a godmother requires compassion. Lately, I don't think you've got much.
Ooh! Godmother burn!
Yeah, that's awesome.
So rise up, doormat. Rise up.
It won't last.
Narrator,
but I loved it.
He didn't.
No. So then we see Dylan is supporting Steve at the trade-in of his Corvette, which Steve is a lot less chipper about than he claimed to be when Janet was present. A stages of grief related denial crack is just so that Dylan can segue to this. Clip 11.
Sort of like denying some of the NC-17 elements of my life when you chose me to be the godfather.
Guns? Drugs?
Yeah.
Trust me, your fallibilities were duly noted, especially by me.
Oh, so this was all Janet's idea?
She thinks you're dependable.
What do you think?
Look, I want you to be the godfather. I just don't want to see you screw up.
Surely you know one other man. Like, honestly.
I mean, all right, but let me ask you this. Did you have godparents? Like, formal godparents?
Yes.
Okay. Mine were already my aunt and uncle by birth, like, in my family. So that's who. But in your family, was it, like, really an honorarium? Or, like, you would have gone to live with them if your parents had passed?
Oh, no. They had designated other people to adopt us if they had passed away. This was just for religious reasons.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. Ours weren't religious, but it was like, well, your godmother is your aunt. And I'm like, shouldn't I have another godmother though? Like for funsies?
Right.
No, I just wanted to maximize the chances that someone would give me a pony. So that's what it was about for me. But I wasn't even aware until many years later that it was like, oh, that was the situation.
Right. Well, my backstory is, you partly know is that, you know, my mom married my dad, who's not my biological father, when I was five. And and I had not been baptized before that, even though my mother was had been raised Catholic. And my dad, before he married my mother, was a Jesuit on his way to becoming a priest. It's a pretty good story.
I love it.
So I didn't get baptized until like right before they got married. So I assumed that this couple was like people that they thought were like, or probably my dad thought were, you know, local, but also strong in the church. Like, I have no idea.
Right.
They were married to each other. But yeah, I'm sure my parents haven't talked to them in a million years and I have no way of like tracking them down. They were not close friends. So I should ask my parents sometime, like, why did you pick those two people? I won't say their name.
Yeah, I do think for Catholics and like Episcopalians that it's much more like formalized and it's just different in terms of like, these are deacons and pillars of the church community. And I mean, my aunt was a minister, but that was incidental.
Right. Yeah. Well, when my sister was baptized, which was only like 2 years later, they did go with like one of my aunts and from the opposite side of family of the family, one of my uncles, which made more sense. But they were not a couple either. So, but I think if my parents had died when we were minors, we would have gone to live with that aunt. Anyway, is this interesting? Moving on.
No, I hope so. It won't last because back to the episode.
But enough about us. David comes over to try to get Steve hyped up about the captain's chair in the minivan. Steve and the lot guy argue over what the Corvette is worth. The issue, per the lot guy, being that they sell family vehicles and won't be able to unload Steve's penis car. And David makes a really bad seat face on the seat as he's trying to show off this car. So Gina has apparently just finished training Mel, personal training him. They're now at the hotel bar. He wants to pay her to go away, but she's determined to get him into peak physical condition. Reed, charge him exorbitant rates out of revenge for his telling Kelly about Gina's bulimia. Mel whines some more and Gina notes that it's cheaper than child support. Hint, and he agrees that it was wrong of him to go to a strip club, and doesn't she think that he has paid for it by now? And she claims to feel sorry for him and tells him to give her the check. And once he has secured a promise that she won't tell Jackie anything about any of this, she looks and sees that the check's for $1,000, which is apparently more than she asked for. Meanwhile, Steve is trying his luck selling the Corvette himself in the Peach Pit parking lot. And as Steve pouts to David about getting the car a good home, we learn he has named it Big Steve. Creative. Anyway,
okay,
this guy Steve thinks is unworthy offers $28,000. Steve claims there's an oil leak, trying to talk the guy out of the purchase, and it works because Steve has changed his mind and wants to keep the car, or at least doesn't want to sell it to a guy in a fanny pack and sweatpants and Cosby sweater, which I don't know, fair, I guess. So Gina and her money bags interrupt Dylan writing again, to offer lunch at the Ivy and a massage at Burke Williams. He can't go because he's going out of town for this godparent thing. Gina thinks that's great until she hears that Kelly is up for the role of godmother, so that he and Kelly are going on a special trip without Gina. Dylan begs her not to get weird because it's too late. And honestly, when she talks about what bullshit it is that Kelly and Dylan are playing mommy and daddy now, she's not really wrong. Like, I get her point.
Yeah, totally.
But when he asks what will make Gina feel better, she demands that he not go on the trip or be the baby's godfather, and he does not agree. So then Gina storms over to David's to yell at him about Kelly and Dylan being godparents. Like, why should David care? And of course, he doesn't. Clip 12.
Can I come in?
No, not if you're going to bitch about Dylan.
Even a broken piss face is right twice a day.
So if she were going to bitch about Kelly, it would be fine. Well, that does turn out to be her plan, Gina says. Clip 13.
You got a couple hours?
You heard my show in the last 3 months?
Yeah, I know, David. You're angry. So am I.
You know, it's amazing, though. I've actually figured out how to put up boundaries.
That's great, David. You know, I'm freaking out.
I'm crazy about you. That I can look you in the eye and say that if you came here to talk about him, I don't want you here.
It's really nice weather we've been having lately, huh?
I am really not a fan of this whole, like, the root of all of David's shittiness is that his heart is broken about Gina. Like, he liked her for a day.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is not an origin story, really.
No.
So,
alas, here we all are.
Indeed. But he actually smiles at her joke about trying to change the subject to the weather. And although he can't help her with Dylan, he does let her sit there with him outside. So he sticks to his boundary of no, you can't come in if you're going to bitch about Dylan. So apparently Steve and Janet have gone to Ojai for their wedding rehearsal because they're in a gazebo with a pastor that he's telling Janet he may kiss the bride. I don't know.
Also,
the pastor is Dr. Kelso from Scrubs. There's some tiresome stuff about how big Janet thinks she is and Dylan opining that the marriage/baby combo platter, as he calls it, is the way to go. Like anyone asked before, Pastor Kelso says these are important events for Dylan and Kelly as well. And they are assholes about it in clip 14.
Being a godparent certainly feels important.
Yeah. And if someone would explain to us what it means, we might actually take it seriously.
And you said he'd only send Junior checks.
I didn't say that. I said that you would send checks with lots of zeros. My problem is I just don't know that I'm going to be any good at it.
Well, Kelly, in asking you and Dylan to do this, Steve and Janet have started to build a spiritual support system for their family, that's all. There's no roll call, no dues, no weekly meetings.
We just like the idea that you're going to be there. That's nice. Thank you.
You we tolerate.
Yeah.
In their child's eyes, you and Dylan will be linked for life.
Oh, no, they'll hate that.
Especially since your child will be linked to both of you.
But I also love that, like, Janet's strategy was like, pick your richest friend and then the woman that will make him do it. Like, all right, she's got a good lay of the land. Smart.
Yeah, true.
Anyway, back in L.A., David is going into the peach pit when a woman standing by Steve's car, which he just left there to go out of town, is bummed that the for sale sign that she had seen the day before is gone and volunteers this to David just because he's there. And then she then asks if he knows if the car had been sold. Like, why would he know that? I mean, he does, but why would she assume that he does? Anyway, she knows a bunch of tiresome facts about cars, and when he tells her that the car is not sold yet, she recognizes him, barf, from his radio show, and knows the gross catchphrase he apparently hasn't retired, despite his whole epiphany in the last episode of putting people together, that's all forgotten. This woman, whose name turns out to be Marta, thinks most women agree with David's whole thing, but that they're too scared to say what they want. And she changes the subject back to the car, offers $1,000 over Steve's former $27,000 asking price. So David calls Janet, who has Steve's phone, and answers it. She then blows up Steve's spot about reconsidering selling the Corvette, which, of course, Steve hasn't told her he decided not to do. Janet orders David to sell the car and takes off to yell at Steve. And why David should trust this woman's personal check, or that this woman should trust that David has the authority to sell a car he doesn't have keys for, I do not know. I mean, we'll later find out he does have the keys, but also why? Like, why was he in charge of the car? Why was it left there? Why any of this? So Dylan and Kelly in Ojai go for a walk and discuss Pastor Kelso. Dylan has to say he's a typical man of the cloth whose ideas of how the world works are different from Dylan's, like, we know. But Dylan does like the part where Pastor Kelso said that Dylan and Kelly would be linked for life, and then decides to try to be poetic so that we get a glimpse of what he's been prosing about on all his legal pads in the middle of the night in clip 15.
Hey, did you ever see the pink moment?
What is that? That sounds obscene.
It's what they call the sunset up here.
Oh, good, because you were making me nervous.
It has something to do with the light and the clouds, and there's a scientific explanation about the light bouncing off, but the bottom line is everything glows pink for about 2 minutes. It's neat.
That sounds amazing. Have you ever seen it?
Yeah, back when I was less cynical.
You know what? Maybe you're not cynical. Maybe you're just unhappy.
Yeah, maybe both.
You all right?
I'm okay.
You're boring.
Yep.
So just then the minivan pulls up so that Janet can announce they're leaving because Steve is cheating on her with her stupid car. They're still fighting about it, which Kelly dares to marvel at as though she is not the queen of picking stupid fights. And Dylan tells them to go. He and Kelly will rent a car and check out the sunset together. Okay, seriously, what is the ethos of David's stupid show at this point? Because he's holding forth to Marta and it sounds like the same old shit in clip 16.
I'm really just telling my listeners the stuff I wish someone would have told me. Don't let people walk all over you. No. Be strong, love yourself.
No wonder it resonates. That's the theme of my work.
Really, what do you do?
I'm an artist.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm surprised.
Judging me by how I look?
If I didn't objectify women, what kind of a chauvinist would I be?
Mm-hmm. I'm a performance artist, so in a way, my body is a part of my work.
You don't say.
I'd love to show it to you sometime. My work, that is. Or whatever.
Yeah.
Also,
please make that whatever the mace that you keep in your purse, because I'm here.
Also, all the performance artists can pay $28,000 cash for a Corvette on a whim, for sure. For sure.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Anyway, David is about it. They make a date. He goes to pay the check, as he states he thinks guys should do, and while he's seriously directly behind her, she pulls a tape recorder out of her extremely 90s satiny tiny purse and plays back the last thing he said about checks, but he does not hear his own voice because it's TV. Oh, yeah. Remember that guy who's about to be executed? That's still going on, as we're reminded when we cut to Matt's office, where Gina is nervously offering Walter coffee and he's monologuing about throwing his watch away when the phone rings. Everyone's on edge thinking it's the governor, but it's just Kelly in a hotel room in Ojai calling for an update on the case she keeps saying they shouldn't be talking about. She starts by saying they've both said a lot of things lately, but then totally doesn't apologize and just tells Matt she's staying in Ojai tonight. Like, he's waiting for a client's execution. She could have just not said anything, and he probably wouldn't have known if she had come back or not. So this seems like deliberate button pushing on her part, because she's the worst.
Yeah, like, especially that's like, well, I'm just here with Dylan. Dylaning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hope it goes okay with your issue that I don't agree with and I'm being a cunt about. Like, cool. Thanks for calling, hag.
Oh, wait. I was wondering if you'd wavered. Glad to know you haven't and you still suck. Bye.
Your hair actually looks pretty cute in this scene, though. Okay, I gotta go. Free up the line. Bye.
So Matt briskly thanks Kelly for telling him because he would have worried about where she was. And then she keeps talking, saying that she and Dylan will head back in the morning. And Matt's like, oh, Dylan. And that is what Gina overhears and is annoyed about. And Kelly keeps talking now about the pink moment and why they didn't ride back with Janet and Steve. And so somehow Matt doesn't scream at her that he kind of needs to keep the line open, but he does get rid of her. And as soon as he hangs up, Gina wants Matt to join her in spinning out about all the cheating Dylan and Kelly are probably going to do on them, which is not unwarranted, but Matt doesn't have the patience at this moment. So Gina grabs her purse and says she's going to watch the sunset in Ojai. And Dylan ends up somewhere Pastor Kelso is messing around with some flowers. There's some pink moment small talk. We're just 90 minutes away, folks, when Dylan, the nonconformist, decides he actually may need some spiritual guidance in clip 17.
My wife She died 4 years ago, and the last time I was here, it was with her.
You saw the sunset?
Yeah, we hiked up to Shelf Road, you know, nothing fancy. We just took a blanket. She picked some oranges. That was the last time that I really remember ever thinking about any of the things you spoke about this morning.
Now you're here again to see the sunset with Kelly, who obviously loves you very much.
Is it obvious? I mean, you seem to think that Kelly and I are a couple.
Are you worried that your wife wouldn't want it to be more?
We're just friends. It's just the way it's always been. Although I have been with other women since Antonia died,
Truly? With all your heart? You know, Dylan, maybe you shut down after Antonia died. Maybe it's time to start watching the sunset with the right person again.
Brenda exists. God damn you, show.
Yeah.
Brenda exists.
Yeah. Like, are we really supposed to think he got back together with his girlfriend of several years? Someone he was with, like, 10 times as long as he was with Antonia, whether they were ever married or not. And, like, it meant nothing to him? Like, this is so stupid! Also stupid that he doesn't even mention, like, oh, yeah, I also have a girlfriend now that I barely respect. Like... And it's not Kelly, anyway. Speaking of this unrespected girlfriend, Gina has stopped for gas on her way to Ojai when her credit card is denied. She shoves cash at the guy and then calls Mel to set up a session for the next day. He reminds her that they're through, so she threatens again to expose him to Jackie. And even though I personally think strip clubs are pretty gross, I'm about to defend Mel for just wanting to look at strange boobs when... Clip 18.
I wonder what Jackie is going to say when I call her and tell her that you offered that girl $100 to go into the back room with you.
You're sick.
Yeah, whatever. Listen, about tomorrow, I think I can be available at, like, about... Hello? Hello?
I just assumed that she was making that up.
Well, yeah, I mean, we don't know if he did or if she was just going to say that he did. And we also, like, $100, like, that might just be a lap dance. Like, again, I personally think that's gross, but that's, like, in bounds for a strip club.
Yeah.
Anyway, Steve and Janet stop at a light when a guy in a red convertible pulls up next to them and, addressing Steve as sir, asks the time and then squeals off to drown out his answer. Amused,
because
Janet tells
apparently it's 1958 on the streets of Los Angeles. Yeah.
Seriously. Okay, Reggie. Anyway,
get lost, square.
Stay out of Riverdale.
Amused. Janet tells a brand new story about their first date in which she sat low in the seat so no one could see her, claiming lower back pain, which Steve believed. The point is that it wasn't about the car, it was the guy inside it. And if that guy wants to drive a phallic symbol, he should. But she told David to sell it. Steve denies that his car is phallic. It's sleek, but he would rather have the car back than argue about it. So then Dylan goes to Kelly's room to get her for the pink moment. But there's a story coming up about the Pete Hawkins case that she wants to watch. And Dylan just sits next to her and doesn't make a big deal about it, even asking interested questions, which is a big progress for him and his attitude toward Matt. And he's already emptied his own room's mini bar of rum, because why wouldn't he, Sarah? Bottle opener.
I don't know why he wouldn't. He's not in recovery, apparently.
Nope. And other snacks as well as the rum. And Kelly giggles that it feels nice to spend time with him. And turns out the governor has commuted Pete's sentence. And Matt is even interviewed in his office saying what a great day this is for everyone who thinks the death penalty is immoral. And Kelly actually has an adult reaction in clip 19.
He saved someone's life.
Somebody you didn't think was worth saving.
What I think doesn't really matter now.
Now.
What Matt did is amazing.
Yeah, you should call him.
What about the pink moment? All those little bottles of rum.
No, I wouldn't worry about that. They have those all the time, and, well, as for the bottles of rum, we both know I can handle that.
You sure?
I think you should come up here sometime with Matt. Watch the pink moment with him.
Please stop saying pink moment.
Oh. Wow. It's honestly a surprise that doesn't happen more often. That's straight out of the clip. We're not saying the same exact thing.
Oh my God. I mean, I did want to say, and this will be in the visual aids, that when Dylan produces the string cheese as the snack.
Oh, no, wait. Like, it hasn't happened yet. That hasn't happened yet. No,
no, so I thought he brought it with the rum.
He did. But listen, so they're hugging goodbye when Gina somehow busts through this closed and presumably locked hotel door and snarks at them about seeing the sunset better outside. And then that's when Kelly fucking tears open the string cheese and is taking a bite and chewing in the process of chewing as the screen goes to black under the sad plinky piano score. Like, it does not match the string cheese eating at all. It's super weird.
Oh, I was just going to say that when Dylan produces it from his jacket, it's like their provisions for the pink moment, that he has this like proud of himself smile that's very charming.
Oh, okay. All right, fair.
And you actually see his teeth, which you don't usually see Dylan's teeth because he's a miserable.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I thought you were going to say about her eating the cheese over blackout, which why?
Yeah, it was just why very... And she like struggles a little with the wrapper too, which I was like, why are we being verite right now? What is happening? And then I got hungry.
Yeah, string cheese is good. The next day, Steve meets David at the Peach Pit. David hands over the check, but Steve wants his car back. And David doesn't care, saying that Marta's got the keys. Still don't know why David ever had them. There's more tiresome non-banter about this entire situation until David says he's supposed to meet Marta later at her warehouse. Steve states that he will go with David. David says it's a date. Steve's like, not anymore. Yeah. So Janet also comes, where a full-on capital H happening is in full swing and Marta is nowhere to be seen. But then she comes on the PA to tell the guests to free their consciousness and loosen their belts. Steve is not into it, but Janet wants to find out what this performance is all about in clip 20.
I happen to believe the guy should pick up the check. I happen to believe the guy should pick up the check.
Now that voice sounds awfully familiar to me. My God, she taped me.
I happen to believe the guy should pick up the check. I happen to believe the guy should pick up the check.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to my latest interactive installation, The Chauvinist.
Okay.
I love how far down they had to auto-tune him to make him sound like a
man.
Stereotypical dude.
Yeah.
Oh.
So Marta is sitting on the car, which is covered in graffiti, none of which, alas, reads Barb. And she's in a vinyl bustier with a flogger, and a few male dancers with chains are circling as the car spins on a turntable. So she says for the next hour, they will deconstruct in an effort to reconstruct, which is when the dancers come after the car with a chainsaw and a sledgehammer. So hope the check wasn't part of the performance.
Or that Mel didn't stop payment on that, too.
Ew. Wah-wah. Yeah. So Kelly shows up at Matt's office to say she was wrong to keep them to small talk about the case. He wishes that she had been there for the moment they found out about the commutation. And asks if she saw the sunset. She says she didn't. But it's also the next night, so we don't know what she's been doing for the past, like, day and a half. But anyway, she wanted to wait and see the pink moment with Matt. I suspect Matt hasn't seen a pink moment in a while. But anyway. Yeah. In Dylan's suite, Gina eagerly opens her bank statement to find that Mel stopped payment on the check that he wrote to her. But she covers when Dylan walks in. He tries to make small talk about the drive back, which is apparently silent, till she announces that she doesn't trust him. Maybe she was wrong this time, but it's going to take her being wrong a lot to feel differently about him and Kelly. He doesn't try to argue. He just hopes that it happens. He is going out, destination unknown. Gina immediately picks up the phone and calls Jackie. And of course, where Dylan has gone is to Kelly's apartment. But before he can knock on the door, he hears her laughing and sees her and Matt goofing around with Chinese food. And seriously, having more fun in a scene with no dialogue than we have literally ever seen the two of these actors have before, ever.
Yeah.
Like, they're...
Maybe because they got to eat Chinese food.
Maybe. Like, they look like they like each other. They're just goofing around. It's really endearing.
it is really the only time that they have even been close to convincing as people who can stand each other.
Exactly. Even as friends. Yes. Yeah. Yes. You're right. But seeing this, Dylan is also convinced that they like each other, maybe for the first time. And he bravely decides he's not going to intrude after all. We'll see how long this lasts. And that's it for the episode. Let us name our episode MVP. Matt got a guy off death row and delivered a couple of sick burns at Kelly.
Yeah, I'm with that.
All right. Least valuable player.
Marta? I mean, that was a terrible deal on a car that you're just going to destroy. And if you're going to tape David, string him up Kathy Griffin on Seinfeld style.
Yeah, that's a great point. But I'm going to say the dancers that were somehow subservient even to Marta in this performance. Although I enjoyed looking at their butts. They had good butts.
Yes, they did.
Let's do the Kim challenge.
Bad, bad, dangerous to me.
Five ways from this episode, Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know.
It's bad to write Brenda out of your personal history. Not letting this drop.
No, I agree. I agree. It's bad to say pink moment 5,000 times. Gross.
It's probably dangerous for you to agree to be this child's godfather.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely dangerous to continue to drink when you are an alcoholic.
It's bad to clean out your whole mini bar and just give it to Kelly. Those little bottles cost like $8.50.
It's true. It might also be dangerous to eat string cheese, depending on your diet. It could be a real farty pink moment. There's a bonus
brown
one for you.
Moment. Next, why does this always happen? We're talking about farts so that I can't get through the next odds. Okay. Next time on Again With This, Dylan gets gay bashed. Jackie and Mel get ready to, thank you, get divorced again. And Noah gets the blame when Kelly is a bitch about it. And Gina, God damn it, Dave. Dick. Gina gets hit extremely hard in the head, apparently, because she's interested in David again. You'll be interested in some Visine when you get a load of the visual aids. Not falling for it. For this and every other episode of Again With This, Shut Up Dave, which you can find at our website, which is at againwiththis.com. Fuck! You can also follow us on Twitter.
At AWT90210.
I am string cheese of social discomfort, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Pink Moment, Dara Ariano. She is on Twitter at Dara Ariano. Our producer is Skeptical Godfather David T. Cole. I am hysterical. Talk to you next time.
Hi. You know what to do after the beeperoni.
It broke me.
I was really expecting one more fart for the closing sound, but you know,
you can always drop it in there later. Oh God. All right. Bye.